pay program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We're doing a show today that, we've talked a lot about sleep over the past 6 years, dating back to 2005, 2006, when I had Dr. Russell Ritter on the show a few times talking about the effects of melatonin and the magic of the pineal gland, all the way through sleep's effects on performance. We've talked about a variety of different issues related to sleep and disease, or the lack of sleep and its relationship to certain diseases. Today we're going to be talking about something that we may have touched on in past shows, but we're going to get a little deeper into it. My guest today is Dr. Kimberly Fenn, and her group recently did some research into the effects of sleep on memory capacity and memory consolidation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Fenn.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. I think that we can all, I think everybody listening to the show today can attest to the fact that when you don't get a good night's sleep, the next day we like to say, well, you know, I'm kind of foggy today. I'm foggy. My brain's not functioning. I feel like I have cotton balls in my head. I just can't recall where I put that paper that I was looking at that I put in someplace so that I wouldn't forget it. But I didn't sleep well last night, and now I forgot where I put it. We all have experienced this in life. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. I remember a couple years ago we did a show about the effects of sleep on memory, and what I learned from that show was at night when we sleep, the brain kind of works like a hard drive that defragments, and it takes things and it puts them away. These things are little crystals of memories, correct?
Absolutely, yep.
So this is what we talk about when we say memory consolidation?
Yes, that is, yes.
So when exactly does this happen during sleep, and how does it happen?
Oh, those are great questions. So with regard to when it happens, we think that there's a lot of variability regarding what type of memory you're consolidating. So there's evidence in some tasks that REM sleep is important for the consolidation of perceptual tasks. So, you know, when you're trying to learn new ways to see things or hear things, so actual sensory perceptual processing. When it comes to things like declarative memory, which is what people typically think of when we say memory, so your memory for, who the first president of the United States is and that sort of thing. So memory for facts or information, you could say. There's some evidence that this type of memory is consolidated during slow wave sleep. And typically you get most of your slow wave sleep in the first portion of the night. So initially when you fall asleep, you'll soon enter into slow wave sleep and have a pretty strong bout of slow wave sleep during the night.
So one would assume when we look at people who have problematic sleep,
yep.
regardless of whether it's hormonal, diet-related, sleep hygiene-related, most of them will say, you know, falling asleep's not a problem. It's staying asleep. So it sounds to me like the declarative memory seems to be protected because it happens early on.
It could be, yes. It depends on why people are waking up. So we know that individuals who have sleep apnea, for example, they wake up, if they're not treated, you know, potentially hundreds of times during the night. And they're more likely to wake up during slow wave sleep because their muscles are really relaxed, and that's
right.
When the tissue moves to the back of the throat. So potentially, if they're waking up more in the early mornings, so if their sleep is fragmented potentially for pharmacological reasons, then they're probably more likely to wake up early in the morning, maybe potentially during REM. So then, in that case, I think declarative memory would be protected.
Okay. So the other type of memory, which are the events in our lives, Mm-hmm. Right? The things that we see, the signposts, if you will.
Yep.
They seem to be transcribed into memory at what point in time? In REM, you said?
Well, that would be considered episodic memory, which is actually a form of declarative memory. So, like I said, that there's some evidence that slow wave sleep is really important to that type of consolidation of that type of memory. There's also evidence that sleep spindles are really important for the consolidation of this type of memory.
Sleep spindles?
Yeah. So what a sleep spindle is, it's a high-frequency burst of activity that you can only detect in an EEG trace, and it's typically found during stage 2 sleep.
Okay. And when you say a high-energy burst, are we talking that there's a lot of memory processing taking place, or there's a lot of information being compacted?
So actually what I meant was it's a high-frequency burst.
High-frequency.
Yeah, so it's a high-frequency burst of electrical activity.
Okay. All right, so when we are in REM sleep,
yep,
we are still consolidating memory items?
We think so, or there's definitely some evidence that we could be, yes.
Because, you know, I've always thought that REM sleep, because of the rapid eye movement characteristic.
Yep.
For those of us who are old enough to remember some of the early computers, that you could actually hear the hard drive tracking back and forth, looking for data and storing data and writing back and forth, back and forth. I've always thought to myself that was the brain doing the same thing, because there are those who believe when you look to one side, like to the left, you're thinking into your past. When you look to the other side, you're looking towards your future in the way of the thought processing. Is there any relevance to that at all?
I don't know of any.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Like there's people who say they can tell when someone's lying.
Yep.
Because if they ask you a question about something in the present, but you look, your eyes look in a direction where you are scanning for something in the past, mm-hmm. or vice versa, they know, well, obviously you're lying. So there seems to be some sort of coordination between, well, if you look to the left, your brain is processing things that haven't happened yet, or thinking about the things that haven't happened. If you look to the right, you're looking in your past, you're searching things that have happened. Is there any evidence that that's a correct assumption?
I only know of anecdotal evidence regarding that. Now, we think that actually the eye movements in sleep, though, are different than that. So, you know, particularly or during REM sleep, it's widely assumed that, you know, your eye movements back and forth probably reflects you scanning your dream. So sort of looking at your, you know, the dream.
We're watching the movies as they go by.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Thank God that doesn't go on all night. We wouldn't get any sleep. So, okay. So now is it not true that we cycle through sleep in like 1.5 hour or 2 hour intervals, where we go through these stages and then we come back up to a slight sense of awareness, if you will, and then start cycling through them again? Is that true, or is that a misunderstanding?
No, that's absolutely true. And in fact, typically people actually wake up for very short periods throughout the night, but they're very short. So what typically happens on an average night of sleep is when you go to sleep, you enter into stage 1 sleep, which is very light sleep. You'll go into stage 2 sleep for a little while, and then you'll go down into slow wave sleep for a long time, typically in the beginning of the night. And then you'll come back up through stage 2, back up through stage 1. You'll usually get a little bit of REM. You may wake up for a little bit short amount of time that you don't even realize you're awake for.
Right. Maybe you'll change positions. You'll roll over or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then you go all the way back, down into the deep stages and back up again.
Right.
And the interesting thing I think about that is that, the type of sleep you get is regulated based on, you know, the time of the night. So early in the night, you're going to get a lot of your deep sleep, your slow wave sleep, you know, this really restorative sleep. And the end of the night or early morning is when you're going to get most of your REM sleep, which is why if you use your snooze button, which I personally do,
right,
and you're waking up several times, you often you know, you wake up during a dream.
Yeah, always. Yeah, and you have some of your most vivid dreams
at that point
in time as well.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Does it matter when you wake up? In other words, I for some reason, I've always thought that these cycles occur in 1.5 hour increments. And so coming out, the ideal time to wake up is when you're naturally coming up into wakefulness, and then you wake up, and so theoretically that would have to be in increments of 1.5 or 3 hours sessions, if you will, and if you wake up for some reason because of the alarm clock, for instance, during like a deeper level of sleep, that's why you're groggy and you just can't snap out of it for the first hour of sleep. Am I off base with that?
No, you're absolutely not. So there's a phenomenon called sleep inertia, which we all experience every time we wake up. It's sort of that feeling where, as you said, you're groggy or you feel, you know, kind of weaker. You feel like cognition is a little bit slower. And, you know, the duration and intensity of sleep inertia varies considerably based on which stage of sleep you wake up from. And as you suggest, if you wake up from a deep sleep, a slow wave sleep, that's the hardest stage to wake up from. And it's the stage where you're going to feel the most groggy and it's going to take you the longest to actually wake up.
Okay, and when we come back from this break, we're going to get back into the subject matter. But one other question I have for you. With that being the case, if someone – is 8 hours of sleep the ideal increment of sleep if, in fact, these cycles occur in 1.5 or 3 hours or even odd number hours? Should people be striving for 7 to 9 hours of sleep as opposed to 8 hours of sleep so that they wake up revived?
Right. That's a good question. Well, one thing that I think does help protect people from this, you know, extreme grogginess in the morning is that you do obtain most of your slow wave sleep early in the night. So while you'll get some later, you know, in the early mornings, you're much less likely to be in a really deep sleep early in the morning. So, you know, if you need 8 hours, I say get 8 hours. Don't, you know, lower it down to 7 so you wake up in a better state.
I got you. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about what you learned through your study on sleep memory consolidation and sleep. We're talking with Dr. Kimberly Fenn. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com. The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MAHLER.com. If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Company. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Jumping higher, left and more. It's Superhuman Radio.
And on the cool check-in, center stage on the mic, and we putting it on wax. It's the new style.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking about the effects of sleep on memory and memory consolidation with Dr. Kimberly Fenn. Okay, so explain the design of your research. What were you looking to elucidate?
Yeah, so we're interested in the change in memory across sleep. And a lot of, you know, there are a lot of other labs who are interested in this work and who are pursuing this work. But one thing we set out actually to answer two specific questions. The first thing we wanted to know is, on a really basic level, do individuals differ in the amount of benefit they derive from sleep? So we wanted to know, so let's say you and I learn something, we're in a class together, we're trying to learn some information, and we go to sleep. When we wake up in the morning, are we going to obtain essentially the same benefit to our memory from sleep? Or is there more variability just across individuals? And the second question we wanted to ask was whether or not this sleep-related memory ability related at all to online memory processing or conscious memory ability. So we tend to think of this sleep-dependent memory ability as a form of unconscious memory processing, right? So you don't go to sleep saying, well, I really want to remember the name of that new colleague I just met. Your brain just sort of acts on it without your awareness, or outside of your conscious awareness at least. So with regard to the first, this is, of course, the first large-scale study.
Right.
So we were the first people to really be able to investigate whether there were individual differences in this capacity. And what we found is, perhaps not surprisingly, that there were substantial individual differences in how much people derive, how much benefit people derive from sleep.
But, you know, are you able, you know, sleep is like diamonds. You could have a 3-carat diamond and it could look like a piece of coal. And I could have a 1-carat diamond and its clarity and color is just so pristine that it's worth 10 times your 3-carat diamond. And brains are the same way. Sleep is the same way. You have so many variables that are almost impossible to take into account. I would imagine that. I mean, what things were you able to look at? I mean, how did you gauge the quality of sleep of one candidate over another?
Right. Oh, pardon me.
That's quite all right. That's quite all right. I've killed your mic, so don't worry about it. This is live radio. Okay, you're back now. How were you able to quantify the quality of sleep of the participants?
Yeah, well, I mean, that wasn't actually a question that we were able to answer with this study.
Right. Did you get enough sleep last night, Kimberly?
Yeah.
That's okay. There you go.
What we wanted to look at was that if we took people into the lab,
right,
and trained them on our task,
right,
and then let them go back to their normal sleeping environments, whether or not, taking into account or putting aside maybe
Do you have any water there?
Yeah, I'm drinking it.
Okay, take your time. Drink the water. Don't worry about it. Take your time. I do this, and I'm the host of the show, but I'm lucky enough. I have a little button that I can kill my microphone when I want to.
So. Oh, that's great.
That's why no one knows it. Okay, so go ahead. I'm sorry. Good.
No, it's okay. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. People differ dramatically in the quality of their sleep. But here we're looking at, you know, healthy college students at State University.
That's a contradiction in terms. Okay. Healthy and college students. They're living on ramen noodles all day long. And we expect them to sleep well.
correction, ramen noodles and beer.
There you go.
Yeah, no, we do screen for alcohol and tickets in prison. Yeah, well, healthy-ish, I guess, college students. So,
right.
You know, we assume that they're not going to have any major sleep disorders, or they certainly don't have any diagnosed sleep disorders.
Right.
So, just, you know, if we take a broad sample, and, you know, we're looking at what we call an ecologically valid question, right? So on any given day, you know, if we take 100 people and they go off, you know, barring any, you know, medications they're on or illnesses,
right.
If they go off and sleep, you know, will they obtain the same benefit in memory from their sleep, or will there be variation in that? So, you know, what we found is that, you know, some people didn't benefit at all. This is a small number, but they essentially show no change in memory performance after sleep.
Really?
Whereas some, you know, benefit really, really substantially. So up to about, you know, an increase of about 50% of their original learning, which is enormous.
Right.
If you think about
it. Right, yes.
You know, which suggests that, you know, if you and I were in a class together and we went to sleep, you know, you might come back the next morning for the test and have, you know, really strong knowledge of the subject, whereas I may not.
Right. But then again, if I'm sitting slightly to the right and behind you, I may profit from your good sleep. So, you know, but anyway, you know, Dr. Fenn, I have to tell you, I mean, I'm listening to this and I agree with you, but I think that there's an underlying reason why I didn't get the memory storage result from my sleep that you did. And there are so many, again, there's so many variables at play. I think your research is important because now it begs the question, what's going on? You know, what is the difference between these two people?
Yeah, so there is some work, and I think I mentioned this briefly before, to suggest that, you know, the amount and the density of sleep spindles during sleep can actually predict the memory benefit you obtain. And interestingly, there is some evidence that, you know, people do differ in spindle production during the night, just on an average night, you know, regardless of prior sleep.
Right, okay.
So one hypothesis that we have is that, you know, these individuals who are showing this better consolidation during sleep likely or potentially have, you know, stronger spindle activity just on a regular night.
Okay.
So so the next part of our study may kind of help maybe get to your concern. So our next question, again, was whether or not this offline memory processing ability related at all to any form of or form of online memory processing. So,
okay. So in other words, conscious, wakeful memory processing is always occurring. Well, how does that feed into the offline or during sleep memory processing?
Right,
okay,
exactly.
Okay.
So we measured their working memory capacity using the operation span task, which is a widely administered task. And what this is, it's a measure of your ability to hold information and manipulate information in your mind. So, for example, I'll give you a series of letters to remember while you solve fairly simple arithmetic problems.
Right.
And what we found was there was a significant correlation between individuals' change in memory across sleep and their working memory capacity.
So did the people who had better working memory capacities online show a better memory capacity or consolidation process offline?
Yes, exactly.
And that stands to reason, doesn't it, when you think about it?
Right, right. But the correlation itself was actually on the lower end, so it was a significant correlation, but it wasn't very strong. Which means, what we think that means is that these are two distinct memory abilities. So, you know, if I'm tapping into the same memory process, then you would expect a very high correlation. So, for example, working memory capacity correlates very highly with psychometric G or general intelligence. I think the correlation is about 0.8.
Okay.
And there are some people that believe that the two, you know, may not be measuring something necessarily distinct from each other. Whereas here, our correlation was fairly small. I think it was 0.22, suggesting again that this is something different. So we think this offline memory processing is maybe actually a separate memory ability that, you know, people just haven't really thought about yet and haven't really discussed as being, you know, a different form of memory than online conscious memory processing.
I mean, is there any – I remember back in the day when I was in college, they used to sell these little pillow speakers. And you could buy back then cassette tapes of dissertations and books and so on. And you know, you'd put it on at night and go to sleep, and people believed that somehow they were absorbing that into their memory through, you know, through some phenomenon like osmosis. Now, I happen to understand what reticular memory is. And, you know, when we hear constant noises, like if our neighbor in the flat above us gets home at 3 a.m. every morning, when we first move in, the first few weeks we may wake up when we hear him slam the door and his heavy feet clunking across the floor. But after a while, that takes a memory position and we don't wake up any longer.
Yep.
So is anything that's going on outside of us during sleep influencing memory?
It can, absolutely. So have been a couple of very interesting studies. Let me back up for a minute. I don't think that if you play a dissertation during your sleep, you're going to remember it in the morning.
I know. I failed physics the first semester. I can tell you it doesn't work. Didn't work. I should have went to class instead of sleeping with the book.
So I think that type of, you know, really, you know, deep encoding where you have to really consciously think about the information, that cannot happen.
Right.
But there have been a couple of studies that have given individuals cues during sleep. So, for example, I may have you come into the lab and learn some task or some information and give you an odor cue while you're learning it.
Huh.
If I then, you know, present the same odor cue while you're sleeping, what they found is that memory performance the next morning was even better than individuals who just slept without the odor cue.
Wow, now that is cool stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of hard to – you got to get somebody to do it for you while you're sleeping, unless you have one of those little timer, you know, Glade-scented devices there or something like that. I mean, that would work, obviously. All right, look, we have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to pick it up. We're talking with Dr. Kimberly Fenn. We're talking about the effects of your quality of sleep and your sleep on your memory. Now, don't forget to stay tuned. We'll be right back.
She ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger. That's how long I've been on ya. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best price and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com. CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of
of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio. 6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to, is 6-oxoprogesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power block, the world's best dumbbell.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Saturday morning. No, it's not. It's Tuesday. Wrong song. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Just want to let everybody in on a little something. At the end of the show, I'm going to be making an announcement. For those of you who have been waiting to try the new Age Force Power Patch, which contains 25 milligrams of growth hormone in a transdermal delivery patch, I've got an exciting announcement at the end of the show today. This is only for first-time buyers. If you're already buying the Power Patch and you love it, this won't help you. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. I'm talking with Dr. Kimberly Fenn. She is from Michigan State University, and she and her colleague David Hambrick did some research and published a paper on the effects of sleep and memory consolidation. Dr. Fenn, did you ask any of the participants? I understand that this is a subjective question, but did you ask any of them to rate their quality of sleep?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we actually use a standardized form to do that. It's called a Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index. So we have, you know, sleep quality ratings from all of them.
And was there any trending? Did you see? Well, first of all, I got to believe college students sleep well. I slept well when I was at that age. I think as you age, you don't sleep as well for one reason or another. But was there any trending at all in their estimation of their quality of sleep?
Not really, no. So we did look at that, and they're, you know, as you suggested, they're all pretty satisfied with their sleep.
Yeah, right? I close my eyes, I wake up, I sleep good.
So, exactly. Yeah. So we weren't able to, you know, to look at anything specific with regard to memory based on their sleep quality ratings.
Did you ask them anything about their environment? Do you live in a noisy dorm? Do you live off campus in a quiet surrounding? You know, do you ask anything about their sleep hygiene or their environment?
Yeah, that's interesting. We do not do that. So we do ask them to keep track of their sleep for us for a week before they come into the lab, and then, of course, the night of our study. But we don't actually ask them about their environment.
What time were the majority of them going to sleep?
Oh, not early.
Yeah, I mean, not early, like after 11?
Yeah, so usually midnight to 1 o'clock, I would say, is average.
What a mistake. I know, you know, you don't realize these things until you get older. I mean, but I have to believe that if you were to do this, and I believe me, I have no accreditation, so I can say outlandish things like this. No one can threaten to take anything away from me. But I have to believe that if you were to get them to go to sleep within the hour of dusk, when the first pulse of melatonin surges, and it's when we want to go to sleep, but we fight it off, and the adrenals kick in, and we say, hey, no, I'm going to stay up. I have to believe that memory consolidation to some degree might have been enhanced through a better night's sleep. But I could be wrong. Is there any evidence of that from past research of other colleagues or anything like that?
You know, there definitely is not. And the other problem is that adolescents in particular are typically what we call phase delayed. So phase delayed syndrome is considered a circadian rhythm disorder, but disorder is the wrong word to use here. But what that simply means on a very basic level is that, you know, kids, when they get to be 16, 17, 18, you know, up until their early 20s, typically just don't get sleepy early, right? So their circadian system is shifted to be later. So whereas you or I might be really sleepy by 10 o'clock and, you know, ready to go to bed, they're just not. They're wide awake. And regardless of, you know, external activities, it's not just that, you know, their roommates are, you know, wanting them to, you know, play cards or watch TV or something. Right. It's just that they're simply, you know, not tired until midnight.
Have you, I know this is kind of like to the left of center of what we're talking about here, but I mean, I remember reading some research about prehistoric humans.
Okay.
And it briefly touched on this concept of polyphasic sleep, that back when, before electricity and the modernization process, when it got dark, you didn't go out and about, because back then we were prey. We were small, and smaller than the other things that are out there. So we didn't just go wandering around at night. So when it got dark, you went in your cave, you fell asleep, you slept for a few hours, you woke up, you laid there. Because you weren't going to get up and go out and be eaten by a large carnivore. So you laid there. You fell back to sleep. And you slept for a while. And you may have done this three or four times throughout the night until sunrise came and it was safe to start to move around again. Mm-hmm. And that this polyphasic sleep approach is actually what our genetics evolved under. And it is better for us, for lack, you know, better is a very subjective term, but, you know, more optimal as far as, you know, avoiding disease and better body biological function and so on. Any evidence of that in your research into sleep?
I don't think so, no. I mean, there are a lot of animals that are polyphasic sleepers. We're actually in the vast minority as being, you know, an animal that has one bout of really consolidated sleep. But if you look sort of more recently in our evolutionary history, or just, you know, a few hundred years ago before the invention of the light bulb, you know, people were going to bed earlier than we do now and sleeping more than we do now, but they didn't show these patterns of waking and, you know, staying awake during the middle of the night and then going back to sleep in this sort of polyphasic structure.
Right. Cavemen, when they would wake up, they'd think, gee, I wish somebody would invent a light bulb.
Yeah.
I don't want to lay here anymore.
Well, you know, there's a lot of really interesting physiological things that change during sleep. You know, endocrine function being probably the most interesting one, I think.
Yeah.
And we know that if you wake up, you know, all these changes that fluctuate, you know, during the night stop.
Right.
And it really disrupts them. So I think that, you know, having, you know, these frequent awakenings is actually really detrimental to.
Yeah. And you know, and that's why earlier when I was saying, you know, there's so many things that play into a good, you know, quote unquote, good night's sleep. A good night's sleep is not necessarily one where you close your eyes and 8 hours later you open your eyes, because many of us do that and we still feel exhausted and we lack energy and we're foggy in the morning. And it's clear that we didn't get a good night's sleep, you know. Insulin is produced in profound amounts at night, and the diet plays a large role into whether or not a person sleeps well or, you know, has a good night's sleep. And I have to believe that same thing plays a role into memory consolidation, because if you're having all these disrupted cycles, you're having all these hormonal milieus going awry, you're not sleeping well. I can't believe that your memory is being put together properly either.
Yeah, I suspect you're probably right. I mean, I don't actually know the research on nutrition and sleep, but it does seem like it would have to.
Well, I can tell you that I first read this almost a decade ago, and now I'm completely convinced of what I'm going to say, that anytime you have a nightmare,
yep,
or you wake up in the middle of the night fearful that, oh my God, did I mail that check? These are actually hypoglycemic episodes. And we as humans need to attach some meaning to everything. The brain doesn't have a brain that says to the big brain, the little brain doesn't say, oh, no, no. The reason you're waking up is because the big brain is panicked because glucose just dropped really far down. And so we need to, like, engage the systems in the body to get glycogen, you know, flowing again and glucose flow. So you have no way of knowing that that's why you're waking up. So you think to yourself, gee, why am I waking up? Oh, I know why. Because of that scary movie. And that actually takes place. You start thinking about these scary things because you have these scary feelings. You have to attach a meaning to it. I'm completely convinced that nightmares, night terrors, and those types of things are episodes of hypoglycemia.
That's really interesting. So in this work, you know, do they recommend, you know, because typically we tell people not to have a lot of food before you sleep because it, you know, you will see a big drop in sugar. But are they recommending that you do eat?
You know what? There's so many schools of thought about this, and this is one of those things that is individual. For everybody has this. Some people who will say to you, if I stop eating my last meal at 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m., and I eat nothing else for the rest of the night, I get the best sleep, the most restful sleep. I wake up in the morning, I feel good. Then you'll have people who will say that they do the same thing, and they wake up in the middle of the night, starving, and that's another episode of hypoglycemia. They wake up with a panicked feeling. They're starving. They run downstairs. They have something to eat, and they go back to sleep. And those people typically do better with a protein fat meal an hour to a half hour before bed, like cottage cheese and a handful of walnuts. What this does is this gives them the fuel for glucose through gluconeogenesis, but doesn't give them an actual sugar, like a carbohydrate, that's going to translate to a spike that's going to cause this boomerang effect. Because what I've found in my own experience in researching this is when you have a high carbohydrate meal before bed, you have this surge of insulin that precedes the surge that's about to come. And what ends up happening is it drives sugar down so far in the middle of the night that you wake up.
That's interesting. So, yeah, this is one of the problems with, you know, consuming alcohol before sleep as well.
What? Speak on that, please, because there's a lot of people who are espousing that a little bit of alcohol before bed is a good thing because it helps you sleep. I disagree with that, by the way.
No, that's not true. It can help you fall asleep. That is true. I think we've all experienced that. But it can actually be very disruptive to sleep. So there's a lot of research to suggest that it suppresses REM sleep. So, you know, those periods of time in the night where you would normally enter REM, you may actually wake up. And then when you add into that, you know, this huge drop in glucose you have, you know, whatever, 5 or 6 hours into it, or maybe even less, it also can fragment sleep. So,
why does alcohol do that? Is it because it's a central nervous system depressant, or because of its insulogenic effects?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact mechanism.
Yeah, I suspect it too. All right, let's do this. Let's take our last commercial break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up the interview with Dr. Kimberly Fenn. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Girl, that's why it'll never work. You'll have me suicidal when you say
testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones. And Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried. Because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents. But rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
No two amino acids have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine. And no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your miracle noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw, the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age Force Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHRMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHRMEL today and sleep better tomorrow. I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on The Blueprint Forum to ensure your success.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. After this interview, I'm going to break the news to any of you who have been sitting on the fence about the Age Force Power Patch. Got some exciting news. It's just going to be available to 200 of my listeners. You're going to have to act fast. We'll talk about it. Right now, we're talking with Dr. Kimberly Fenn about the effects of sleep on memory consolidation. Okay, so Dr. Fenn, What can we take away from this research that could help us improve the quality of memory through sleep? Is there anything we can do?
Well, our research is really not at the stage where we can tell you how you can improve your sleep. However, I think simply knowing that, you know, this process is occurring while you sleep can potentially influence people to make better decisions regarding their sleep. You know, in today's society, people tend to have a lot to do, right? There's a lot of activities going on, and they stay up late, and they have to wake up early for work. And I don't think that most people are aware of the dramatic and terrible effects this has, both on their body and on their cognitive states.
You know, the elderly have the hardest time sleeping. As you pointed out before we got on the air, you know, many of them are on a myriad of medications that impair their ability to sleep properly. And on top of that, the aging body tends to, for some reason, not want to sleep. You see a lot of elderly people, they go to sleep at 9 p.m. They're up at 2 p.m. 9 p.m. They're up at 2 a.m. My mom was like that. I mean, I stayed with my mother in Arizona for a while. I almost died. She would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, start cleaning her house. I'd say, Mom, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. She'd go, I can't sleep. What am I going to do? She goes, I can't lay in bed and stare at the wall. So she starts cleaning her house at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
And this is not unique. I know a lot of elderly people who say, you know, I sleep 3 hours, I sleep 4 hours. And interestingly enough, memory is one of the first things to go with the elderly. They start to worry. They go, you know, I can't remember things anymore. And so I have a strange feeling that for those who aren't suffering from disease issues like Alzheimer's disease, for instance, but are having impaired cognition because of their lack and continuous lack and mounting lack of sleep. That is part of the reason that their memory is not working properly.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the other problem is that even when they're able to sleep, they're not getting as good of a sleep as we have. So they have dramatically less slow wave sleep than people even, you know, in their 40s, and even less REM sleep. So they're spending more of their time, you know, when they do sleep in these lighter stages, and as you suggest, they're waking up a lot more or a lot earlier, and that's, you know, clearly going to have some impact on their quality of life and on their memory.
I wish I knew if this was also, something that happened to us a few hundred years ago. As we age, we had less and less sleep. This is a good question for me to ask. You know, I have several people on the show, like Dr. Lauren Cordain and Dr. Matt Lalonde and Dr. Rob Wolf, and all these individuals who are studying and espousing the Paleolithic style of eating and even lifestyle in general now. And I wonder if, you know, 400, 500 years ago, we had these problems that as we aged, we had impaired sleep quality. Because I have this strange suspicion that this has come along with the technological advances in civilization. Now, that's just I have this strange feeling.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, we also have a much longer life expectancy as well. Right?
That's a whole nother show, Kimberly. That's not true, Kimberly. We've done shows on that. Do you know that 300-400 years ago, people regularly lived into their 7th, 8th, and 9th decade of life without any problems whatsoever? Imagine that, without even a statin drug. But the problem is, when we look at life expectancy, it is this grouped number.
That's
at that
true.
Same
yep.
time, we had infant mortalities and mothers dying giving birth was skyrocketing. And so you have these numbers down here that pull the numbers up here down. And then we go, well, life expectancy was average of 47 years old. No, that's not. The ones who got past 20 usually lived to be 70, 80, and 90.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, the AMA loves to point at that. Like, you know, hey, look, pharmaceuticals are good. We're living longer. No, we lived pretty long back then, too. I have longevity on both sides of my family. My grandparents lived, except for my father's mother, the rest of my grandparents lived into their 90s.
Oh my gosh.
And interestingly enough, I just did this show yesterday. We were talking actually about what prehistoric humans ate, because it was a good study by Peter Ulrich's, Unger's group. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, I said, you know, I've been watching the Tudors and catching up on, you know, what happened during the Tudor dynasty. And I said, my gosh, women regularly died during childbirth. And he said, yes, that's actually been a problem with human evolution. That women, you know, they always died during childbirth because the birth canal was so much smaller than the head. That's like, we're the only species where the head is so big.
Right.
And so I said, well, you know, Italian women must be built different, because my father's mother delivered 12 and my mother's mother delivered 14.
Oh.
So, and they didn't, not only did they die, but they kept working too at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
So Italian women must be built a little bit differently. I think we're built like Humvees. That's what it
yeah.
is. So anyway, well, listen, so in summary, what do you want people to take away from your research, and what is the next step for yourself and your colleague, David Hambrick?
Yeah. Well, the next step is certainly going, sort of along what you've been thinking, is to try to look at these individuals who do show these really strong sleep memory abilities. We want to really, you know, tear into that and try to figure out why some people are better. You know, is it simply that they, you know, have higher quality sleep? Is it that they have less fragmented sleep, more slow-wave sleep, or perhaps just more spindle activity during sleep? So that's our next major project.
Do you know what causes this spindle activity?
Well, there's a lot of work looking at, you know, different brain areas that are related to spindle activity. So there's some people who believe that sleep spindles are, you know, associated with sort of a signal from the hippocampus.
Uh-huh.
Which would make sense from our perspective because the hippocampus is the area that's
controls sleep.
Yeah. Well, no, that's really important for memory.
Oh, okay.
Actually, in declarative memory. So, is
there any evidence of chemical activities like higher choline, a different neurotransmitter activity in spindles?
Not necessarily with spindles, but with the different sleep stages. There's a very different neurotransmitter profiles. That's definitely true.
Like, does dopamine enhance or impair sleep? Because dopamine is an excitatory kind of mm-hmm. feel-good hormone,
yep.
right?
Yeah. You know, I am not sure, actually.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I don't know. And so then, of course, our other next step will be to see to take the sleep memory ability and see if it does things like predict classroom learning, because we would assume that it will. And if we find that it does, we may actually be able to use it to help increase predictive validity of things like IQ tests, like the SAT and the ACT.
Because there are some people who just aren't good test takers. This would maybe learning unlocking these secrets would actually help them a little bit. Who knows?
Right. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that too, right? Test anxiety comes into it.
Was me. I used to be that way. I was very bad at test taking. I knew the information, but I just used to freeze. And I was one of those guys that as soon as I walked out of the classroom, I was like, oh God, I knew that. Why did I write that down? So that was part of my problem too.
Oh no.
All right. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking time to come on the show.
Oh, thank you. This has been delightful.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye bye.
All right, so there you have it. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the secret that's coming up about the Age Force Power Patch. You're not going to want to miss this one if you've been sitting on the fence thinking about it. So stay tuned. I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The Triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the Triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of Triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Hey, watch your language. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. A week or so ago, we had Professor Philip Filimonov on the show talking about peptides. And totally unsolicited, at the end of the show, he said the next frontier for peptides is transdermal delivery of peptides. He said, just imagine a patch that has the ability to deliver a peptide virtually like having hundreds of little needles seeping the peptide through your skin into your body. He said, this is the next frontier. And I said to him, I said, we have a sponsor that has peptides and patches. And that was totally unsolicited. I mean, he didn't know that. I didn't talk to him about it. And it was just offered up. I told Steve Lapidus over at Age Force, I said, look, there's a lot of people out there who don't believe that you can deliver growth hormone through a patch. Okay? So, and even though we've had people on the show who have said, and I know that there are people who email me from time to time saying that they've been using the Power Patch, and they give me lots of anecdotal information. They all of them always say when they put the patch on, they always sleep better that night, number one. Number two, they say they're getting leaner since they've been using the patch. Number three, they keep ordering the patch. So that means something. So I said to Steve, I said, look, why can't we do a free 30-day supply of the Power Patch? He said to me, it's a very expensive patch for us to produce. There's very, very thin margin in it. It's not something that I can entertain. And I kept working on him. And then after Professor Filimonov said what he said on the show, I said to him, look, this guy is the go-to guy about peptides. He says that the next frontier is delivering peptides through transdermal patch delivery. And maybe some of my listeners are now moving off the fence and thinking, gee, this is something I would like to try. Maybe Filimonov is right about this. And so I've gotten Steve Lapidus's agreement. At starting Monday, the 24th, we will have a banner ad on superhumanradio.com that will allow the first 200 people that click the banner ad to get a free month supply of the growth hormone power patch. Again, it has 25 milligrams of real somatropin in it. It's not a growth hormone secretagogue. It's real growth hormone in the patch. And so they're gonna offer the first 200 people a free month supply. But this is how it works. Just like their free month supply on their beta-alanine creatine patch. You sign up for the auto-ship program. You can cancel anytime you want. I got an email from somebody who said, I wanted to take advantage of the free patch, beta-alanine creatine, but they want me to buy 3 months supply. No, that's not what it is. What they're saying is this. They're willing to give you the first month for free and let you kick the tires and test drive the patch. But they want to know that you're a real customer. You're just not somebody who is a moocher who just wants something for free and really doesn't care. There's no flesh in the game for you. So they want you to sign up for one of the auto ship packages, but you won't get anything shipped to you if you cancel. You can try it and you can wait up to the 30th day, the day before it ships, and you're going to actually have an order shipped that you'll pay for and cancel, and they will cancel you. So you have complete control. The only difference is they want to know that you're a real person, that if in fact you do like the product, you can continue to buy it. And they're not giving this free trial away to some moocher who just wants to try it one day and go, ah, it sucks. I'm not going to buy it anyway. It didn't matter. And I think that is fair for them since they've got flesh in the game by giving you a free month supply. You need to have a little flesh in the game that says, look, if I like it, I'll continue. But if I don't like it, I'm canceling. So you never have to pay for anything. You can get the patch, try it for a couple weeks. If you don't see any changes, any differences, anything, 3 weeks in, even up to the 30th day, the day before they're going to process your paid order, you can cancel. So first 200 people are going to take advantage of that on superhumanradio.com. It's going to happen on the 24th. I'm giving everybody plenty of notice because when that banner ad breaks, I'm sure a lot of people are going to rush to it. Okay, we've got a great show planned for you tomorrow. So tune in, and thanks for listening today.